What can we learn about Indigenous rights from our neighbours across the Tasman Sea? In New Zealand, the 1840 Treaty of Waitangi, which recognised the rights of the Maori population, is considered a founding document. Moana Jackson is a prominent Maori lawyer and academic from New Zealand. He's also an expert on the treaty. He's in Shepparton today on Yorta Yorta country to deliver a speech on treaty, sovereignty and self-governance. Welcome to the program. Your speech is titled At Home on Country, At Home in the World. What does that mean? What are you hoping to explore?
There are a couple of things. The first is that the struggle of Indigenous peoples around the world is partly to reclaim place. That's in a territorial sense and a personal sense. That is to be fully, comfortably and happily and peacefully at home on country. But Indigenous peoples also have the right to be citizens of the world, to be able to express themselves, to exercise their rights anywhere in the world. And the context from which I'm drawing the topic is the work which Indigenous peoples from around the world did for over 20 years in drafting the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
In Victoria, where you're based at the moment, the Victorian Parliament recently passed a bill to advance the treaty process with Aboriginal Victorians. Other treaty processes are underway around Australia. How crucial will those processes be for the future of Australia's Indigenous community?
I think the treaty process has promise, but it also has perils. I think any opportunity for Indigenous peoples to reaffirm their place and their rights is to be welcomed, and hopefully the treaty conversation will allow that to happen. There are dangers, however, which treaty making processes in other countries such as Canada highlight, that the process can too often become government driven and become a process to suit government interests more than the interests of Indigenous peoples. As the cliche says, the devil is in the detail, and I think that will be the case in the treaty process here as well.
New Zealand does have a treaty already, the Treaty of Waitangi. How crucial was that document in the development of the New Zealand government's relationship with the Maori population?
Well, the treaty was signed in 1840, and the struggle of Maori people ever since 1840 has been to get the government to honour the treaty. The government has consistently breached the treaty and continues to regularly breach it today as well. But the importance of the treaty for Maori people is, if you like, a constitutional base from which we can hold the government to account, the constitutional base for the relationship between Maori people and the government. And ultimately, and this is the journey I think that New Zealand is on at the moment, constitutional base for looking at a different way in which the relationship can be expressed in governmental terms. And 2 years ago, I finished as chair of a Māori constitutional working group, which looked at a different constitutional framework based on the treaty. And that's part of the ongoing discussions that are taking place at home at the moment.
Well, Australia is also in a constitutional discussion too, as you no doubt are aware, a kind of process that's going alongside at the same time, a parallel process to the treaty process that some states are embarking on. But Australia is also constantly compared and contrasting itself with New Zealand. New Zealand is actually often held up as an example to follow on Indigenous issues. Is that reputation accurate?
No, I think it's an unfortunate comparison to make. Whatever gains Māori people may have gained over the last 160-odd years have been made not because of government beneficence, but because Māori people have struggled to achieve those gains. The treaty itself is often held up by the government as an indication of how honourable it has been. But the idea of an honourable colonising government is actually a contradiction in terms. This colonisation, by its nature, depends on dispossessing the indigenous peoples of the country. And in spite of the solemn treaty promises, that's what the government did and in many cases continues to do.
You criticise the fact that the treaty isn't honoured, and yet we talk about the history and the fact that a treaty wasn't signed. As you know, of course, in Victoria, you know, and of course nationally even, there are calls for a treaty. Does that show the limitations of a treaty if it isn't ultimately followed and Indigenous people are not satisfied with the outcomes from it?
Well, as I think I said earlier, there is both promise and peril in the treaty process. And history shows that governments are not very good at honouring treaties with Indigenous peoples. The great Native American leader Sitting Bull once said in the late 19th century that the United States government had signed hundreds of treaties with Indigenous peoples, and the only thing they have in common is they have broken every one. Now, one would hope in the 21st century that governments would not follow that same path of dishonour, but I think it is a possibility that certainly Indigenous peoples need to be aware of and to try to work through a process in which that possibility can be removed, really.
Does it also demonstrate that meaningful constitutional change can perhaps have more teeth or more weight than treaty?
I think it's helpful in many ways that the two are related, but the issue with the treaty process is also the most vexing issue for governments in terms of constitutional change, because treaties by their nature are inter-nation agreements. There's no such thing as a domestic treaty. They're signed internationally. They're governed by international law. And the parties who sign as, if you like, independent sovereign nations. And certainly in Canada, for example, where there has been a treaty-making process, the big stumbling block is that the various provincial governments proclaim the desire to have a treaty but aren't prepared to recognise the inherent sovereignty and nationhood of the Indigenous peoples they are dealing with. And that's the same issue that is difficult for governments to address in terms of constitutional change as well, that they regard themselves within the Westminster tradition as being the sole and only possible sovereign, whereas in fact what they have done is consistently deny the sovereignty of the peoples they have dispossessed and denied, in fact, the nationhood of Indigenous peoples.
Moana, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Moana Jackson is a prominent Maori lawyer and academic from New Zealand, and this is RN Drive.